I enjoy talking to the people, and I don't really care for their jokes much, but you know, it's, that's the price you pay, you know, being a comedian. And I love it when the wife backs up behind the husband and she's rolling her eyes and she's like, oh my God. And the joke goes on and on.
Yeah, they can relate to a lot of stuff that you say.
Oh my God. And then you kind of remind them what Shakespeare said, you know, brevity is the soul of wit. You know, you might want to get to the point, you know, you're losing me. And I got a pretty good attention span for this stuff.
Welcome to Your Next Mission video podcast, where we tell the stories of those who have served in the past and those who are serving today. From transition to financial wellness, VA benefits to mental health, we cover issues facing veterans, active military, and their families. Now here's your host, the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army and co-founder of the American Freedom Foundation, Jack L. Tilley.
Hello out there, and welcome to Your Next Mission video podcast. I promise you that we're going to share a few laughs today and also hear some things that'll touch your heart. But before we get started, I personally want to thank our presenting sponsors, Navy Federal Credit Union, whose members are the mission, Purdue Global, where you can start your comeback, and USA, where we take care of our own. With additional sponsorship from Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Dental and Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Vision, together, they make Your Next Mission happen. They love our veterans and families, and I say it every week, we love them too. I'm excited to introduce today's guest, Jeff Allen, first and foremost a comedian, but also an author, a podcast host, and an actor with the TV series pilot currently in production. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. And it's nice that you were able to drop any charges you had against me and allow me on your show. So that's nice.
Well, we did a lot of research on you. We found out that you're clear now. They dropped those felony charges and all that stuff.
That's great.
Not to worry. We're okay. But there is some police waiting outside after this. No, never mind. Hey, we got a lot to
talk. Wouldn't be the first time. Trust me.
Hey, we got a lot to talk about. Before we go any further, hey, Jeff, tell the audience just a little bit about yourself. Take about a minute or so. Tell the audience about Jeff.
Well, born and raised in Chicago and started a comedy career in 1978 in Chicago. By 1980, the entire country exploded with comedy clubs. So I was able to hit the road 45 to 50 weeks a year, being bad at something, you know, and learning a craft. And 7 or 8 years into that, I was headlining comedy clubs. I met my wife. We moved to Boston. I was an alcoholic and a drug addict. After I got married, a year into that, I got sober. I had to hang on to my marriage. And then, so I've been sober since 1987, I think. Yeah, 1987. Have 2 kids, 4 grandchildren, and I am a believer in Christ.
Well, God bless
that
you.
That pretty much sums up, 50 years of my life.
Well, I used to drink. Probably not as much, but I used to drink, get drunk every Friday night when the Army come out and said, "If you get caught drinking and driving, we're going to put you out." I say, well, I quit drinking, so I haven't had a drink since. Hey, this is probably a couple crazy questions here, but what made you choose comedy as a career? I mean, was you funny in school or something?
I don't know if it was I chose it or it chose me. I've always said, if you like to nap, get a job at a mattress factory. I like to drink, so I found out I can make a living in a bar. That's not a bad place for a drunk to be. You know? Doesn't work well for the bottom line. It doesn't work well for savings, you know, but it certainly worked well for my addiction. Again, I got serious about it after I got married and had 2 kids. I realized I better take this. So I didn't know that I would be doing this long. When I started, it was just something. I was 22 years old, and I really had no skills. I had no desire to do anything. I wanted to play baseball, and that career was over. So it was just kind of a good fit, and I realized I had some skill at it. And so one thing led to another, but I really didn't take it serious till I hit 30. I was 8 years into it, living in Boston at the time. And then I moved to New York I was living in LA when I met my wife. I thought that would work out. Yeah, it's not something you see on high school career day. They don't have a table set up for a booth for stand-up comedians.
Yeah.
You know? And most parents are not pleased when their adult children say, hey, I'm going to disown you when you do that.
Say, I'm going to be a comedy. Absolutely. Well, I don't want to talk to you no more.
At least my parents didn't invest $50,000 in a college education for me.
Yeah, you saved a lot of money.
Yeah, exactly. I've run into those comics whose parents disowned them because they completely threw away the college education. But those guys usually succeed. I mean, if you can get yourself a bachelor's degree, you have some form of discipline, and the art form does take discipline if you want to succeed at it. It took me years to figure that out. But
Was there a particular moment along the way that made you think, hey, I can do this. I can make a living out of making people laugh.
Well, define a living, you know, to me, I quit a job. I think I quit a job making $300 a week. And I said to myself, man, if I can make $300 a week telling jokes, whoo, you know, that would be great. And quickly it was 500. I need to make five because I had some habits I needed to feed, you know. Then it was 1,000, then it was 1,250, then it was 1,500, then it was, you know, then I realized I'll never make enough money if I keep doing what I'm doing. So, yeah, I really enjoy the art form. I really do. I wouldn't be doing it at 70 years old if I didn't enjoy just the process of putting together a story, starting with a basic premise, an idea, or a joke, just one line that gets a laugh, and you think, gee, I wonder if I can build a true story around it.
Yeah.
You know, I was always interested. I made up a third kid for years because of the joke I wrote about three kids. And when I finally put out a video that said I had two kids, and people were emailing me and reaching out on Messenger, did the baby die? Should we pray for you and your wife? And I'm going, man, I made the kid up. And then they were upset that I lied to them.
I go,
it's stand-up comedy. It's stand-up comedy. It's not a, you know, it's not a documentary. Yeah. You know, I'm kind of going for the joke here. And a third kid fit for 2 years. It was a great joke. But anyway, I realize people do take it, maybe more serious than they should, but there has to be some believability in it. Otherwise, you don't get the laugh.
But you're probably a people person, aren't you? Aren't you a people person? You like talking to people and getting around people?
I wasn't.
You wasn't?
When I was drinking. Oh, I was the worst, man. My manager used to run a club here in Nashville. He told me I was the first one out the door after the show, and now I'm the last one to leave the room. I am so grateful that people come out and are willing to sit and spend their hard-earned dollars on what I do that I understand that. I mean, I do not take it for granted. So I'm there every night, the last one to leave. I'm taking pictures, shaking hands, and I have become, I enjoy talking to the people. And I don't really care for their jokes much, but, you know, it's that's the price you pay, you know, being a comedian. And I love it when the wife backs up behind the husband and she's rolling her eyes and she's like, oh, my God. And the joke goes on and on.
You know, they can relate to a lot of the stuff that you say.
Oh, my God. And then you kind of remind them what Shakespeare said, you know, brevity is the soul of wit. You know, you might want to get to the point. You know, you're losing me. And I got a pretty good attention span for this stuff. So, well, yeah.
Yeah. I think the other thing you said, I think as you get as you get a little older in life, you just appreciate things a lot more because, you know, went over so many hills in life because life goes up and down like this. And hopefully as you get a little bit older, it sort of levels out a little bit. And you start looking back a little bit and say, man, I tell you what.
And you don't take it so seriously.
No, you don't. You just enjoy life.
Again, somebody gave me an exercise years ago when I was early in recovery. They said, write out 10 things today that are upsetting you and look at it in 2 days. If there's more than one thing on that list of 10, then you've got a troubled life. And it really does work. I mean, I have some family members that, were distraught at the election results in 2024, you know, and called me they were on the ledge, man. And I said, tell you what, man, write out 10 things that you think worst case are going to happen in the next 4 years. And every year, pull them out of the drawer, look at them and check them off the list or add to the list or whatever. But for gosh sakes, live your life. both, you know, all of them, they have beautiful children, they have beautiful lives, they have beautiful whatever, and they're focused on all this stuff they have no control over. That was one of the greatest gifts I got from a 12-step program, was grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
Yeah.
What a great prayer.
Well, yeah, that's great advice. One of the things I tell people all the time is stay in your lane. You know, just don't worry about what goes on to the left or right. Just stay in your lane and live your life. And don't worry about things you have no impact on, you know.
Right, and trouble's coming. I mean, yeah, sure, you know, it's very clear. You know, anybody who's lived past the age of 40 knows, you know, yeah. You can't, nobody gets off this earth scot-free.
No.
So the question comes down to, can I control this? And if the answer, then now what do I do to fix it if it's a problem in my life? You know, I got that from the book Road Less Traveled. Scott Peck wrote about it. He's basically, life is nothing but a series of problems that need to be solved. And when you figure out how to use, if you get the right tools to solve the problems in your life, and some of them aren't worth it. I hire people now to deal with problems that I don't want to deal with.
And
one of them is my lawn. I'm so happy.
Hey, look here.
You know, a lot of guys love doing, my manager just lives out there every week. He's out there with basically barber shears, clipping every last blade of grass to get it even on the top. And me, I don't care. I just, come on in, man. I'll pay you whatever you need to do so I don't have to do it.
Well, it's funny you say it, because I do the same thing. I got a guy cutting my grass, and I'm trying to figure out a guy to, we're lucky enough to have a pool because I live in Florida there. And I'm trying to
figure
out
somebody. Let me ask you this. Did you feel like less of a man when you hired someone to do your lawn?
No.
I felt like I did something as a man I should be doing. But you know, I got over it like in an hour when I saw the work they did. Holy cow. And then I got actually kind of excited as a man watching them weed whack. I go, man, if I could do it like that, I think I would do it. I mean, I'm knocking rocks through my windows. I'm knocking the things hitting my leg. I cut my gash in my calf. You know, my wife says, wear boots. I go, I hate wearing boots. It makes me sweat. And then I come in with all these nicks and cuts on my legs. And
Did you give your lawnmower away? I gave my lawnmower away.
Not at all.
I gave it all away. I said, you guys need this.
I got a beautiful zero-turn boy. I just look at it and go.
Yeah.
People come in and they go, wow, what a mower. I go, yeah, never use it.
Hey, your humor is based mostly on ups and downs of everyday family life. Let's take a look at that. We're going to watch a little clip right here on that, right?
I believe teenagers are God's revenge on mankind. I really do. I think one day the good Lord was looking down over his creation and said, let's see how they like it to create someone of their own image who denies their existence. Because I have read the Bible more than once, cover to cover, and it never mentions how old the devil was when he rejected God's authority. If I'm guessing an age, I'm saying 16. Devil got his driver's license, drove to Georgia. That's all I know.
Did it take a long time for you to figure out what worked best for you?
Oh, that's a great question. Yeah.
That's a good answer.
Milton Berle said it takes 10 years for a comedian to find his voice. I was at it a lot longer than that. In the 90s, I thought I wanted to be Dennis Miller. Dennis was doing cultural, political, not necessarily political, but cultural stuff. I was really bad at it. I was losing work. My wife, who loves me and loves having a roof over her head, came to me one day and said, stop it. Nobody cares what you think.
Yeah, yeah.
So I just started kind of, what came naturally was talking about the frustrations. I was not a poster boy for marriage. I was not a good, I was a fixer-upper as a husband. I needed some changes to do that. So the frustrations of that, initially it was bad. You know, I was angry. We were going through some problems and stuff, so it would come out very harsh and very bitter. It turned off a lot of women. Female club owners were telling me, we're not going to hire you anymore. We don't like the way you talk about your wife. Tammy would leave some shows in tears. I was brutal. I was, but it was kind of a process And it really was coming to my faith, just getting on my knees and saying to Jesus, I'm yours. I don't know what that looks like. I don't know what it means. I'm 40 years old, but our life was just kind of getting back together. I was, you know, it had imploded for all no better word than that. It just completely imploded around us. So anyway, that relationship with Christ changed everything. It softened my heart. It opened my mind up to grace and forgiveness, and being able to extend that to not only her and to, you know, but to myself for all of the mistakes I've made in the past, and to let all that go finally and just live day to day. You know, a simple example somebody told me once was, look, if the devil exists, and I believe he does, but if he exists, he'll beat you up with your past. If he can't grind you down with all the mistakes you've made, if you finally get to a point in your life where you've accepted that you've made those mistakes, but you've moved beyond those, and now you're living inside grace, he'll beat you up. He'll get you projecting in the future, and it'll never be a pretty picture. And that's what was killing me. I would project my life 5, 10, 15, 20 years down the road, and I never saw a difference. I didn't see the life I have today. I really didn't. Every time I projected, it was just more of the same, the same, the same. And the God is telling you, look, I want you here today. I want you with your wife. I want you with your kids. I want you on stage in that moment, delivering what humor is, you know, and not projecting in the future and not looking at the past, but today, man. And it sounds easy, you know, to be here in the moment. But the more I can do it and the better I get at it, the more full my life is. And that keeps me from, you know, really looking at the news and projecting 5 years down the line. You know, you're an ex-military guy, man. You know, you have to live in the moment.
Yeah.
You might get shot.
Yeah.
If your head is drifting off thinking about other things, you know, so you learn, you know, I'm here right now. This is what, you know, I got to deal with.
Yeah.
And, you know, my son is, we've talked about this off air.
Yeah, but, we're going to talk about him in just a little while too. But
yeah, okay.
But, let me
but anyway, that's the changes that came were basically in accepting that one, God existed. That was a huge one for me, that there is a God. And then the fact that he loves me was like, holy cow, how can I get my head around that?
Yeah,
When I
went to war, and I think everybody goes to war, I got closer to God. I remember saying, I was laying out in the jungle, and a lot of things are going on around me, and I said, God, if you just get me out of here. I don't know if I ever told you a story. I had a Bible, and when you get to, this is years ago when I went to Vietnam, they give you a little pocket Bible. And so I got to be honest, I never went to church. I didn't do it. But I took the Bible and I said, okay, I put it in a 50 caliber can and I put it on the front slope of this tank.
Mine went in a junk drawer. So,
so what I did was, though, after about 2 or 3 weeks, one day, I don't know why, I opened this box up and I grabbed the Bible and I opened up. On the second page or so, there was a blood mark on that Bible. And so I got to tell you, I never touched the Bible. Nobody, it had never been opened. And so I kept that Bible with me for about 11 and a half months. And I got to back up a little bit. Everybody that was on the vehicle that I was on was killed, but one guy, the driver, before I got on that vehicle. When I left, everybody got killed, but the driver on that vehicle. So for that 11 and a half months, nobody got hurt or nobody got wounded. And that Bible was my lucky charm.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, wow. And so the day they alerted me to leave, they just sort of come out with a helicopter and say, hey, you're leaving, till they grab your stuff and let's go. And so I went up there and I grabbed my ruck and I grabbed all my stuff and I got out of this 50 caliber box and I was getting all my stuff and that Bible was gone. Weirdest thing in the world, you know? So,
wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, but going back to that, there's been a few things in my life that, I have an older son that had pneumococcus meningitis. I'll tell you a quick story here that he had 5 to 10 seizures a day. He had pneumococcus meningitis, left him temporarily blind, lost his hearing aid, had a lumbar shunt put in his spine, had encephalitis, just all sorts of stuff. And I never thought he would live past the age of 7 or 8 years old. And I was up at Fort Lewis, Washington, and my wife called me and said, you got to come home. Brian's sick again. And so I came home and I went and seen the doctor, said, hey, what's going to happen? Now, at the time, he's on four or five different kinds of medication. And I went and asked the doctor, said, what's going to happen? He said, we don't know. If he makes it through the night, I think we hope he's okay. So I went into this annex and got down on my hands and knees. And I said, and it's an emotional time for, you know, when you're talking about your kids. I said, imagine. God, let him live or let him die. It's not fair for him to be treated like this. And the next day there wasn't nothing wrong with him. You know?
Really?
So, So I hear people all the time talk about, I strongly believe in God. I think there's things in my life.
If you haven't experienced that, and for someone to hear that, I know, because I was a skeptic and an atheist.
Oh, yeah.
If I had heard that 40 years ago, I would have said, yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But I've heard too many stories like that.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's
yeah. Yeah, powerful.
And you got to be smart enough to see the things that are going on around you. And sometimes we have our eyes closed and we're not looking. We're just worried about ourselves more than anything else. But you got to worry about, it's all about, for me now, I'm sure for you too, it's all about giving back. It's about being kind and being nice to people and doing all you can for the people around you. So yeah, it's just important for me in my life. I try to do all I can, just like you do, I'm sure, but all I can to give back each and every day. Hey, you started to talk about a few minutes ago. You have a son who served in the Army, I guess, for 6 years, including a deployment to Iraq. We need to take a quick break, but when we come back, if you don't mind, because I know sometimes these are hard stories to share, if you don't mind, I'd like to share some of the struggle he faced after coming back from war. So don't, Jeff, don't go anywhere. I know you won't go anywhere. You're a good person. Stay right there. I'll be right back. Hey, this is Your Next Mission Video Podcast with me, your host, Jack Gil Tilley, 12th Sergeant Major. I mean, if you're enjoying this discussion, I know you are, because we're talking about a lot of things that affect all of us. We're talking about God. We're talking about family. We're talking about you. And we're talking about the way you should treat people in your life and how blessed you are just to take a step forward each and every day. Please like us. Click on that subscribe button below. Be sure to click on the bell to receive notifications of all of our upcoming video podcast releases. I'll be right back after a word from our presenting sponsors.
You're watching Your Next Mission Video Podcast, proudly presented by Navy Federal Credit Union, the most trusted credit union owned by members of the military community, serving all branches of the armed forces and their families. Learn more at NavyFederal.org. Their members are the mission. Purdue Global. You're ready for a comeback, and with Purdue Global, you can do more than take classes. You can take charge of your story, of your career, of your life. Earn a degree you can be proud of and get an education employers respect. Start your comeback at PurdueGlobal.edu. And USAA.
A century ago, our founders made a promise to always take care of their own. That promise is still at the heart of everything we do and why our members know we'll do what's right. Because at USAA, we take care of our own.
Now back to your host, the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army, Jack L. Tilley.
Welcome back. We're talking with comedian, author, and actor Jeff Allen. Before we get back to our discussion, I want to let you know about a way to support the work we're doing on behalf of our veterans and their families here at the American Freedom Foundation. If you have a used vehicle you're planning on getting rid of, or some property you don't have any plans for, you can donate it. Visit our website at AmericanFreedomFoundation.org/donate and click on that vehicle donation button or that home donation button to support our work. We really would appreciate your support. Jeff, when we first met, you told me about your son who fought in Iraq and who, like most everyone who fights in war, was not the same person when he came home. Would you share your story? Because I think there's a lot of people in our audience that certainly can relate to that.
Well, I think one of the hardest things as a father was the fact that he didn't share any of it with us.
Yeah.
We didn't know he was living through this private hell, you know, but that all between his ears, you know. Until I believe, and I can't remember the year, you know, but somebody I got him hooked up with a friend of mine who was working at a rehab center. We would just have breakfast once a month. Just a good friend of mine, former songwriter, and just a really sharp guy. And he was working at a rehab center and stuff. And he started talking about a number of the people that were coming in with PTSD and TBI. And I said, oh, my son was came home with that. We knew he came home with PTSD and TBI. We just didn't know what that was. Mm-hmm. Again, he got married. He was sharing later when he got married. But anyway, I asked him if my friend would, if he would meet with my son, because I know he was going through some issues. He wouldn't share with me what they were, but he shared that he's having a struggle. So anyway, my buddy called me and told me, he goes, you need to get him in somewhere. And I said, oh, okay. Well, we'll talk about it. And not 2 days later, my buddy called me and said, I think it was Trace Adkins and Winona Judd. It might have been Naomi, but when one of the Judds had set up a foundation or a fund to get soldiers help that they needed from a place in Nashville here. And there were no beds, but that he would be listed for the next group. Well, as it turned out, and it happens all too often, one of the soldiers committed suicide and opened up a bed. And that was one of the most eye-opening things, you know. You know, you hear the 22 a day, you hear that stuff, and it just kind of washes over you because it's part of the internet noise. But when you're looking at one of your own children and you wonder, you don't know. Tammy and I would talk about it. We'd just go, I don't know, what's he going through? He won't talk to us, you know. And I know enough from my own struggles with addiction that unless you're with people who've gone through it, they can't possibly understand it. They may be able to, but you don't believe they can. So the bed opened up and he did 6-day intensive, came out and just said, Dad, it saved my life. And then he opened up with me about the thoughts of suicide, the all-encompassing weight of whatever he was carrying. He had to put friends of his into body bags and things. Well, you know, the horrors of war.
Yeah.
We're not meant to, as human beings, to experience this. So anyway, he was good. You know, and we met his wife, they've been married. He had his issues. You know, we all know what that is. You know, when my sons were getting married, I sat him down and told him, I said, I put things in you where you're too young to remember. But you're going to act in a way as a husband that you think is unbecoming of who you think you are as a man. And I said, come to me. I said, I can help you. I really can. I said, it doesn't do me any good to tell you this stuff now. Wait till you. Anyway, we came out one night and his daughter, my granddaughter's 4-year-old dance recital, you know, good, beautiful time to watch your little daughter dance. And Aaron was in the garage ripping the door off his minivan. Something triggered something, I don't know, and that rage, and I know the rage, I know it. I never went to war, but, you know, I had that rage, that where that discernible click in the back of your head, and you're no longer in the room now. This thing takes over your entire soul, and you got to hit something, punch something, you got to break something, you got to, you know, rip something, you got to just get it out. His wife sat by and watched him do the whole thing, man. Never said a word to him. What a saint. What an absolute saint. And he finished what he was doing. He looked, and now I know this is where the shame kicks in. And it usually triggers another episode. Well, she looked at him and said, you know, Aaron, why don't you go sit down and get your breath, and we'll get the door back on, and we'll go home. That was it. That brought me to tears. I got in the car. I just sobbed with my wife. I said, man, God gave him the right woman. Yeah. What a beautiful response to what is an embarrassing thing, you know, but she understood. That's not him. That's not the man she married. That's the guy that came home from Iraq, and that rears its ugly head periodically. And it just gets farther and farther away from episodes. Well, last year he called me up. He said, I'm having episodes again, and I'm scared. Would you be willing to pay for, an intensive? And I said, absolutely. And then his wife called later and said, he's got an addiction problem. So I called him back and said, I will pay for 30 days. I won't pay for 6. If you're willing to check in for 30, you're going to detox for a week at least. So, 6 days won't do it. So anyway, he agreed. And, he's been sober now 6 months. When we talk, he sounds like his old self again. And again, the help is available. It's just getting the soldiers to be willing to open up. And that's what really opened his eyes, was that first 6 day thing, sitting in a room with men that have been through what he's been through. And the fact that some guys were more willing to share than others. And when he first got there, you know, again, he's like a lot of, you know, look, I don't know if I trust you. I just, you know, the enemy of our soul will lie to us and tell us we're the only ones that feel this way. We're the only ones that have ever been through this. Nobody will understand. And you need to carry this weight, because if you're going to be a man, you got to carry this. Well, that's the biggest lie in the world.
Yeah.
We're meant to be in community, and you need to find a community of men that understand and have been through it. And, you can see the results of opening up and sharing, those secrets that you carry, that you think are yours, your burden to carry. That's a lie. They're not. We're meant to carry each other's burdens through this life.
You know, when I came back from war, most people go to war, to actually fight in war, 18 to 24. I don't know how old your son was. How old was your son? You remember?
He was in his early 20s.
Yeah. So I understand exactly what you're, when I came back, for about 2 to 3 years, I had anger issues. I mean, I didn't know what was going on. I mean, I did some crazy things. And my wife stayed with me, and I don't know why, but
we never do.
No, that's true. But
grace. Grace.
Oh, it is grace. Yeah. But I went, I mean, I even actually hit a guy one time, knocked him over a table, and I didn't realize I did it until it was too late. I don't know how I got through it, but the way I got through it, at one point, I start talking about it. I start telling people how I felt, whether or not they wanted to listen or not, I was going to tell them, you know, I sort of opened it up, and it allowed me to sort of work through some issues. The other thing I'll tell you is, most guys that are in the military wear body armor all the time, even when they take it off. They don't want to talk about things that are inside. They want to keep it to themselves because they think people around them, and I think you said it already, think they're weak and they're not strong enough to do the kind of things that we may have to do. And really the bottom line, if you think about anybody that goes to war, there's two things going on. Either I'm going to kill somebody or I'm going to be killed. You know, right. That's the bottom line. So
Then you live with that.
Oh, yeah.
Adrenaline and dopamine and these rushes of just fear.
Yeah.
And I mean, I can't imagine. I told my son, I said, I have no idea, son, what you went through. But I know this, if you keep it inside of you, it will kill you.
Oh, absolutely.
It will eat you alive.
Yeah.
So find a group, find somebody, that you can talk to, that you trust. I don't know if it's a therapist, whatever. And again, there are people. And when I went to therapy, the first question I asked, how long do I got to do this crap? You know? And she said, boy, that's quick. Normally it's after a couple of months. I go, well, look, I'm not coming to you the rest of my life. So when do I know I'm done with therapy? And she says, well, all right, simply put, right now you make some really crappy choices in your life. When you can make better choices on your own, you don't need me. I'm here to help you navigate the choices right now. And I said, I can live with that. That was intellectual. It was there, you know? And again, I wasn't going to sit there and blame my parents for 7 years on what happened to me. I just wanted to understand why I was the way I was. Where did this rage come from? You know, you're not born with rage. You know, kids don't come out of the womb and punch their mother in the face. Yeah. So it comes from somewhere.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's all I wanted to know. It's kind of an excavation thing, you know. And then what I loved about the 12-step program is they laughed at you. You know, you'd sit there and tell them some deep, dark secret, and they'd laugh and go, yeah, we did that, you know. And then you realize, you know, you're not, they call it terminal uniqueness. The problem is most addicts suffer from terminal, they think, we're the only ones that have been through this. Nobody can possibly understand. And you look around the room day after day, and they're all laughing because, yeah, we did that stupid stuff. My favorite, I used to use this as an example. I was in New York once at a meeting, and some guy, you know, and I'm making this up, but he said, you know, I stabbed my wife this morning, you know, and like eight guys raised their hand and go, yeah, I remember when I did that. You didn't drink, did you? No, I didn't drink. Okay, well, you're okay. You got a chance to serve, you know. But that's kind of what it is. It's, you know, no matter what secret you think you're carrying, you get in with the right group and you'll be laughing about it. And that's what really got me through recovery was the humor. At the pain, there's a tragedy plus time. I think it was Woody Allen said that. Good comedy is tragedy plus time. You take the pain and the tragedy of your life, you heal from it. You look back on it and you see, you know, I was responsible for 90% of the folly in my life, you know, and if I can't laugh about it, it'll kill me. It'll eat me alive and that'll be it. And I think we've lost our sense of humor a lot culturally. Certainly when it comes to the political classes, the ability to laugh at our politicians, to make fun of them. That was what was so uniquely Western about our civilization was we took the highest of the high and we mocked them mercilessly. And that should be the way it is. These people, they're just men, they're just women. And we put them up on these whatever pedestals. I don't do that. You know, the only one I have on a pedestal is Jesus Christ. That's it, you know. And the rest of us are all just trying to figure this out. And at some point we'll get plunked in the dirt. And you know, Pascal's wager, I love that. You know, if I'm wrong for my faith, who's been harmed? You know, because of my faith, I'm a better husband, better father, I'm a better comic, I'm a better citizen, I'm even a better golfer.
we got to play golf sometime. I love to play.
Yeah, if I get thrown in the dirt and I find out all I am is worm food, who's lost? You know, who's lost? But if I'm right, I get to see my mom again.
Yeah.
And boy, do I owe her some apologies, man.
Oh, man.
I really do. And my dad.
Hey, Jeff, I want to talk about your book and the TV series. You shot a pilot for, but first we need to take a quick break. So when I come back, we're going to talk about those. Stay right there. I'll be right back. Now, here's one more word from the organization that helped make this show possible.
You're watching Your Next Mission video podcast, brought to you in part by Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Dental, Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Vision.
Part of transitioning out is that dental and vision insurance breaks off from your medical insurance.
Vision and dental is very important to be able to enjoy your retirement.
Blue Cross Blue Shield makes a transition so much easier.
Now back to your host, the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army, Jack L. Tilley.
Welcome back. We're blessed here today with Jeff Allen, comedian, actor, podcaster, and author. Remember, this is your show. We know there's so many issues that directly affect you, and we want to address each and every one of them. So please, let me know what you'd like as a cover. You can leave me a message at 844-424-1134 or send me an email at smatilly@yournextmission.org. And guess what? I'll reach back out to you. Hey, Jeff, you have a book called You're Not There. Are We There Yet?
Are we there yet?
I knew I was going to get it. And I have a copy right here. Are we there yet?
Yeah.
From what I'm telling me on the prep, or what you told me on the prep, it sounds like you didn't pull any punches on this book right there. In fact, talking about you and your wife, right?
No, the first six chapters, I always tell audiences, if you can get through those without killing yourself, it's actually an uplifting tale. we opened up all the darkest parts of our marriage. I just felt it wasn't enough to write in the book. Yeah, I was an angry husband and angry father. You know, I wanted to give some examples. And then as I began to open up, and I found it kind of healing for me to just get them out there and let people know that, look, you know, you can get through just about by every metric the government keeps, we should be divorced. And we were literally, we were 10 minutes from filing divorce papers at one point. We had the papers filled out. We had them notarized. They were all legal. We were on our way to the courthouse to file them. And then Tammy changed her mind. She said, let's go home. And that was 30 whatever years ago. But, I deserve to be divorced. But she gave me chance after chance after chance. That's why I keep using the word grace. That's what grace is. It's an undeserved gift. And I started to become, I think, the man that she, you know, it's interesting. I've always tell my wife, if you would lower your expectations of me, you'd have be a much happier woman, you know.
True.
And
all of us, I think.
You're expecting some stuff from me that I don't think I'm capable of doing. And one of them was being kind. But I've learned to be kind to her. I've learned to, you know, I've spent the better part of 30 years trying to make up for the first 8 years. So it's a search for meaning, purpose, and point to life. I believe, again, I think it was Socrates, an unexamined life is not worth living. So if we don't examine our lives, and it's hard to live a full life and a purposeful life. And that's all we really want. And I think men, you alone, I think you'll agree with this. We were wired to provide and protect.
Yeah.
That's our role in life. Yeah. And when we're providing and protecting, we can at least feel that we're men and doing our duty and our life's purpose. And I was never at a lower point in my life than when I couldn't provide for my family. The comedy career wasn't going well. The marriage wasn't going well. So all of that stuff that you're wired for by the divine, if you're not taking care of that, then these feelings of inadequacy, these feelings of not, you know, what am I doing? What am I doing wrong? What am I, you know, this, you know, and so anyway, when I found the divine and connected into that truly, then I was able to understand what I was put here for. And then I set about making those provisions for my family and those protections for my family. And that's when I really connected into what I think my purpose was. And that's really just, and it was a little late to be a father. You know, my kids were already well into their teens by the time I figured all this out. So I've been kind of trying to play catch up with them. But the grandchildren, I'm spoiling the snot out of them.
Ah, yeah, there you go.
That's what now I can provide for them. my son was mad because I would go down to the driveway. They lived a quarter mile from us. And I would give the kids cookies right before dinner. And and I said, I would tell my granddaughter, tell your father you got it from a nice man in a van. Just driving by.
Well, the problem is, you know, the problem is I didn't watch my kids grow up because I was always gone, always traveling, always doing things. And so I really understand what you're saying, because now I have five great grandbabies and two granddaughters, but I try to spoil them and I give them what they want, because that's what grandparents do. Hey, you're working on a new TV series based on the book. On the book right
Absolutely.
Here.
Absolutely.
Would you tell us about
Absolutely.
That? Tell us about that.
We taped it. It's a what they call a pitch pilot. Mm-hmm. It's a 12 to 15 minute idea of what we think the show will be like. We cast a comedian named Jeff Dye in the lead role. He's going to play me. And then I'm going to play my father, Jack. I love it. I get to play my dad. And I get to saddle another human being with all the baggage I got saddled with. You know? So, and then a beautiful actress named Sarah Zanotti is playing Tammy. And then we were very blessed. I don't know if you watched the show Justified on FX. Anyway, it was on the U.S. Marshal Service. The head marshal was an actor named Nick Searcy. Nick is going to play Tammy's dad, Mike. That's is going to be a really interesting dynamic. He's a brilliant actor and just a really decent human being. So the cast is set, and we filmed it, and now we're just going to pitch it. We have a couple of studios interested in looking at it. And I always tell my audiences, if you never see the show, then you can rest assured the pilot sucked. So, but anyway, we shot it, and it's in the can, and we're hoping that somebody picks it up, and we can shoot this. It'll keep me home more, which is nice, and this late in life to take on a role that is really personal to me, my dad, and then to tell our story. Basically, the arc of it is to restoration and redemption. That you're not a victim of your circumstances. You're not a victim of your past, and you can't change. Men can't change. Women can't change if they just tap into that divine source that designed us and that is willing to change our hearts. And through a heart change, then your mind, and then that first season is going to be brutal. It's all the alcohol, drugs, the anger, the rage, all that fun stuff that people like to watch. The train wreck. that was me and Tammy.
Hey Jeff, this has been a great discussion. Any final thoughts that maybe you want to share with the audience? Anything that you want to talk about?
No, I'm sure you share this stuff, but yeah, if you're struggling at all, and isolation is the destruction of our souls. We were meant to be in community. Find a community, whether it's a 12-step, whether it's a military get-together, whether it's a VA. I used to drink a lot at the club down the street, the VA where the military guys drank. It was literally five doors down from where I lived, and I got to drink with all the guys. And I just had a heart for the military and the sacrifice. I remember when my son didn't re-up, he didn't redeploy, he was just he was coming to the end of his 6-year thing, and they wanted him to stay, and his group was deploying to Afghanistan, and he sat in tears and said, am I a coward for not wanting to go? And I said, are you kidding? I don't ever want to hear that come out of your mouth. If you serve this country in a uniform, you've done more than 99% of us will ever
absolutely.
So thank you for that, but get the help you need, and especially if you're isolating.
Yeah.
And because there's a freedom out there that you never knew could exist. Just put one step in front of the other. It's literally some days, one day at a time, 1 hour at a time. But you can get outside of your head and get those secrets out and find a group of people, man, and laugh about it. And that's kind of what I look at my purpose in life is just to bring laughter to people. I'm a distraction for an hour, hour and a half out on the road. And you can go to my website, jeffallencomedy.com. I'm hitting every state over the next 7-8 months. So come on out and laugh. And we also go to Vet Ticks. If I haven't sold out the show, we open up Vet Ticks for the veterans to come in free of charge to enjoy the comedy. So,
Well, I tell you, when you come to Florida, make sure you let me know. I'd love to go watch one of your shows.
Well, yeah, definitely. I mean, you're in Florida. I'm coming there. You know, I was just there, Waresdale and Melbourne.
Well, so, I think I told you before, we live just right outside of Tampa there. So come on down. And
I go to Tampa and I go to Orlando at least once a year.
I'll drive up or just go down the street, one or the other. Hey, Jeff.
Well, reach out. I said, we'll cover you. We'll give you a free ticket.
Oh, hey, yeah. How about my family, my cousins, my nephew?
Oh, sure. Yeah, we'll fill it all up with Sergeant Major Tilly in the group.
Hey, Jeff, thanks so much for coming on. And thanks for opening up. I mean, this is important stuff that you was talking about. It was really too quick. I wish we'd have talked for a couple hours, but you're helping people.
Come back. No, I can have you on my podcast.
Well, absolutely. But you're helping people and you're telling your story. And I love the fact that that you say, I'm an open book. Let's talk about the things that maybe we don't want to talk about. So
right.
I just appreciate you coming on the show. God bless you.
Well, bless you too, man. Thanks.
Thanks again to Jeff Allen for being with us today. I'm going to keep that book right close to me. I'm Jack Tilly, 12th Sergeant Major of the Army. You've been enjoying Your Next Mission video podcast. And thank you for joining us. Log on to our website at yournextmission.org and check out our job board in partnership with Recruit Military and Upline, where you can create your own personal profile that will match you with just the right job real time. You can also follow me on my personal social media pages, Facebook, X, Instagram, YouTube, and LinkedIn. And if you like what we're doing with Your Next Mission, please click on that subscribe button below. And don't forget to click on the bell to receive notifications of our upcoming video podcast. Remember, we want to hear from you. Please leave a message at 844-424-1134 or send me an email at smatilly@yournextmission.org. Thanks again for Jeff being on the show. Just unbelievable. Great comments. Great perspective in life. And he talked a lot about God and the importance about opening up and being yourself and being kind to people. And don't think you're alone by yourself in life. You see a lot of people, and he talked about his son, a lot of people struggle coming out of war. And I talked about myself struggling when I come out of war. I didn't know what I was going to do. I didn't know how to work out of those issues. But simply by the grace of God, and that's what it was, by the grace of God, I worked out of them. You see, we all can work through those issues. You're not by yourself. We're a team. We're people together that want to live our life each and every day. So you're not alone. Don't never think that you're alone. People like Jeff and myself will do all we can to help you each and every day. Thanks for watching, and thanks to Newmont Studios, and of course, our sponsors, Navy Federal Credit Union, Purdue Global, USAA, Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Dental, Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Vision. We appreciate all you do for our military. As always, see you on the high ground. Hoo-ah!
You've been listening to Your Next Mission, brought to you by the American Freedom Foundation. Learn more by visiting yournextmission.org.